WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
One of the most critically acclaimed shows of the new TV season is Lost. It's about what happens after a commercial airline crashes, leaving the survivors stranded on a mysterious island where they face dangers, some of them supernatural, lurking in the jungle. We learn about the characters gradually through flashbacks. Lost was created by J.J. Abrams, who also created the series Alias, about a CIA agent leading a double life. Another Abrams creation is Felicity, a TV series following a college student in New York. Abrams wrote the screenplays for the films Armageddon and Forever Young. Our TV critic David Bianculli is enthusiastic about Abrams' new series Lost and spoke with him about it. Here's a clip from the pilot. Matthew Fox from Party of Five plays a doctor who takes care of others before taking time to tend to himself and a nasty gash in his side. He takes a travel sewing kit and asks a dazed survivor walking by, played by Evangeline Lilly, to stitch him up and close the wound.
I might throw up on you.
You're doing fine.
You don't seem afraid at all. I don't understand that.
Well, fear's sort of an odd thing. When I was in residency, my first solo procedure was a spinal surgery on a 16-year-old kid, a girl. And at the end, after 13 hours, I was closing her up, and I accidentally ripped her dural sac. It's right at the base of the spine where all the nerves come together. It's membrane is thin as tissue. And so it ripped open. And the nerves just spilled out of her like angel hair pasta. Spinal fluid flowing out of her. And the terror was just so crazy. So real. And I knew I had to deal with it. So I just made a choice. I'd let the fear in, let it take over, let it do its thing, but only for 5 seconds. That's all I was going to give it. So I started to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it was gone. Sewed her up and she was fine.
If that had been me, I think I would have run for the door.
No, I don't think that's true. You're not running now.
David Bianculli asked J.J. Abrams to describe the filming of Lost.
We went to Hawaii where we shot for 40 days, which sounds great, but it is sort of tough when there are no interiors and you're out there. And it was a pretty, grueling but incredibly challenging and fun shoot.
What are some of the things about location filming that are so difficult?
Well, there's a sequence that's in the first hour of the show where, as an example, they are in the rain in the jungle and they go to find the cockpit of the plane, which has fallen into the jungle, and they go to retrieve a transponder where they hope to be able to send a signal. And they get to the cockpit and it's leaning against this enormous tree, and they climb up the cockpit inside, and they get into the cockpit, and there's a pilot who is actually still alive. But the entire scene, the whole sequence was shot. If it had been a film, they would have built a set. They would have built an interior of the cockpit. They would have it would have been somewhat feasible and comfortable. And this was just we had a cockpit of a plane in the jungle that they just placed against this tree, and essentially it was like good luck. Just, so we were in there. We literally shot, the sequence in this enormous cockpit that was, at a like 60-degree angle. And it was, we had all the rain. A lot of it was real rain. And it was, muddy and smelled horrendous. And we were in this can. It was one of those things where the fun was sort of, the fun level was so high that it didn't matter that it was just, sort of hard to do. to have all the crew in there and all the lighting, and it was hot. It was just one of those things. I'm not complaining that it wasn't, you know, a great time, but at the end of the day, it was doing that for 4 or 5 days, shooting with, you know, it was a real jumbo jet. It was lying there dressed remarkably realistically, so it looked as if this thing had just crashed. The fact is that, you know, it's a horrifying sight, and with all the smoke and sort of rubber burning and all that stuff we were doing, it just wears on you. And after, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks, you know, you're out there and you're shooting this stuff, and it was just exhausting, you know. So we did the, you know, the shoot there, and when you don't have any interiors and you're just shooting outside for that length of time, it can be one of those things where after a while you feel like, God, I miss Felicity. Those mm-hmm. kids in that dorm room, that was so, you know, you can't believe how easy it was to do those scenes.
How prominent are the Twilight Zone elements of Lost going to get as we get further into the season?
There are a lot of elements to the show that excite me, and the primary one really is the role of the cast of characters. I mean, the people who are on the island to me are kind of the only reason to tell the story. They've all got a history, and we're using flashbacks in order to see who these people were just prior to and long before this flight in every episode. And so you're going to get a chance to see who these people were and who they sort of are now, which is really, for me, part of the pleasure of working on the show, is getting to sort of do that. Simply, you know, speaking visually, spending 1 hour just in the jungle or just, you know, on the beach, it is gorgeous, but you got to modulate it a little bit. And so I think that the flashbacks also help in terms of getting us off the island. The Twilight Zone aspects, to me, are going to always be present, but the show is in no way a straightforward sci-fi show. The fact is, you know, I've had a lot of discussions about this, you know, sort of what is straight sci-fi and what does that mean exactly? And, you know, whether it is, you know, something that is more obviously science fiction, like, you know, Alien, or comedically science fiction, like Back to the Future, or more subtly, you know, science fiction, like the stuff that, you know, David Cronenberg might do. You know, to me, the use of extraordinary circumstance sort of colliding with ordinary people is the most interesting storytelling.
Let me ask you some questions about Alias now. You pulled off a very strange plot twist a couple of seasons in by adding 2 years in between seasons, changing things, and then going back from there. How was that received by most fans? What are you doing to start this season?
We've always done weird things on the show. I mean, Alias is it's such a specific. It's like having, you know, a kid that is really quirky, and people kind of look at the kid and go, "That's a kid's interesting." I think the thing about Alias is that, given the kind of twists and turns you do, you've got to be really careful what you do, because saying that someone is dead and then learning that they're not, saying that, you know, a character has a roommate who then gets killed and is replaced by, you know, an evil double, these are like the most embarrassing things to say, because you say them and you feel like an idiot. I mean, literally just now, I'm like sweating. So we trade in a very strange place on that show. And the key to that show is it's done well when we commit to the A version of what is ultimately, you know, a B premise. When you say spy show, when you say, you know, sort of normal, at first at least, college girl by day and sort of spy by night, and, you know, you're creating a world that clearly cannot exist in real life without sort of having an attitude. And so the thing about the twist we did, that 2-year jump, that to me was one of the twists that I feel wasn't quite, you know, thought out as well as I wish I had thought it out. The 2-year jump to me was something that I thought was it was an amazing reversal at the end of an episode. I mean, she literally wakes up, you don't know, you know, where you are, and, you know, I think the character was, she was lost and scared, and then she ends up finding out that the man who she loved, who, you know, 3 scenes earlier had basically had this great weekend plan with, and everything was looking really rosy, and she discovers that, you know, 2 years have passed, and this guy is married, and So it was sort of, you know, a great way to end the year, because it felt like, oh my God, now what? The problem was for me is that the now what didn't live up to, you know, the actual response, didn't live up to the question. And the show to me in that last season got away from the thing that I loved about the show, which is that the characters relate to each other in sort of a specific way. And I felt that we were misusing almost every key relationship on the show. We had eliminated two relationships that I really did love of her friends. You know, her father, she and her father sort of didn't really have much of a story, which was a mistake. And, you know, despite all that, we still did some stuff, some entertaining episodes and some stuff that people really, you know, it's some people's favorite season. So I have no idea, again, what the hell people want. But this season, which begins in January of Alias, we're doing, we did a lot of, I think, really cool stuff to get everything kind of to click back into where it was in the beginning.
How do you do that? How do you course correct?
Well, we looked at what we had and we said, well, you know, what's the best version of this show? How can we get back to the thing that we all love about this show? And we realized that there were some fundamental, you know, choices that we could make that would almost make the paradigm of the show that of the first, you know, two seasons. And it was really a question of saying, you know, I mean, look, someone like David Kelly, who, you know, to me is one of the masters of TV writing. I mean, this guy, he'll do anything he wants. And you'll believe it because he did it. So, for example, he'll have a character who was always the secretary in the law firm show up, you know, in an episode and say, you know, so I'm going to law school for the last couple of years and now I'm a lawyer. And you're like, the hell? And in the next episode, she's a lawyer. And you're not sitting there wondering and thinking. He just will make, you know, and, you know, I've only done these couple shows, so I sort of like, I have so much to learn still, and I'm still watching what other people do. And what you realize is you can, you know, debate forever over the, you know, how you do something and is it possible? If you know it's the right thing to do, you've got to figure out how to do it, and you just need to do it and commit to it. The key is you can't make it so far-fetched that the audience, whether new or, you know, or a loyal viewer, feels like it's something that's too preposterous. I do think that given the sort of hyper-reality of Alias, that these adjustments that we've made are some of the least egregious things we've done, and immediately I think the show, you know, reaps the benefits of those choices.
Another Alias thing that I'm fascinated by is the fact that you sometimes introduce the theme song and the title credits 10, 12, 15 minutes into the show where they shock me because I've forgotten that they haven't been here yet. I've never seen this before. Why do you do this?
It's literally like it's one of my favorite things to do, which is just sort of have the show play and have a long first act. I mean, we've had first acts that I think have gone 21 minutes long or something, and then we'll just do the opening credits. And we just sort of feel it's this bizarre thing that we just I can't really explain it. And, you know, at first I thought, oh, I'm going to be really clever and we'll do this and people get sucked in and the ratings will be higher. And then you'll be, you know, by the time you get to the it never helps our ratings. I mean, like there's never been a benefit to it other than I think it's just funny to me that we do this on the show. And there's no reason other than that, really, that I feel like if an act is working and you're rolling with it, let's not cut away. And then, you know, remember the Fugitive movie, the Harrison Ford movie?
Sure.
I remember watching that movie and having that same reaction where the credits came up fairly late into the film. And I had that same reaction. I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. This is all preamble. Oh my God! Like there's a very interesting psychological, I think, interaction between, you know, for the audience where you're watching something and there are credits on screen. I think that for some people it's irrelevant that they don't even, you know, look at them or recognize them. But I do, for me at least, it feels like when I'm watching a scene and there are credits underneath it, it oddly takes the onus off that scene having to be an excellent scene. So there are a lot of times when we'll have a scene that's kind of a little clunky, it's not quite the greatest scene, and we'll go, okay, well, if we make that the first scene of the second act, we can put credits over it, and it kind of takes the edge off that scene having to be, you know, just the greatest thing you've ever seen. So it's sort of like credits can kind of be a little bit of a, you know, a shellac or something, or to kind of make the thing seem a little shinier than it is.
We're listening to the interview our TV critic David Bianculli recorded with J.J. Abrams, creator of Alias, Felicity, and the new series Lost. We'll continue the interview after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to the interview that Fresh Air's TV critic David Bianculli recorded with J.J. Abrams, creator of the new series Lost. He also created Alias and Felicity.
You got interested in writing, specifically writing for film, very early, and you got exposed to more television than most young people do. How did that happen?
My father is a TV movie producer, Gerald Abrams, and as a kid, you know, he had an office at the Paramount lot, and I would go with him to work on occasion and just wander around the lot, and it was a fantasy. I mean, it was just the greatest thing, especially because my favorite thing was walking in to the facades of buildings and looking around the back side and seeing that they were, you know, they were nothing, and they were actually storage rooms usually. But it was that weird thing where it was sort of like this desolate Twilight Zone sort of feeling. In fact, the first episode of The Twilight Zone, which is my favorite show of all time, which was called, I think, Where's Everybody Gone or something like that, with Earl Holliman. And it was essentially inspired, I learned later, by when Rod Serling was walking around a back lot, you know, much like I did when I was a kid. And he, of course, came up with a genius idea. I mean, for me, it was more just, it felt cool to walk around a place where movies had been shot.
How old were you, and what years were these?
Oh, well, I was born in 66. I can tell you what happened, which is that, you know, I'd go into Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy. They would be rehearsing these shows, and no one would be in the bleachers. But I sort of would get to know the guards a little bit, and they'd let me in. I'd sit in the bleachers, and I'd watch them rehearse these series. And you know, it's very odd because, you know, you're watching the show at home as a kid. You're watching Happy Days, and there's the Fonz, and there's Richie, and they're, you know, and you go and you're sitting there in the bleachers, and they're all wearing their you know, civvies. They're all wearing their clothes that they'd wear, you know, any day of the week. And it was sort of this odd, you know, seeing a kind of like a play rehearsal. And it was amazing, like watching Robin Williams rehearsing for Mork and Mindy, and, you know, seeing him just go off and be you know, crazy. It was just such an insight into the process. And so I always loved watching the half hour show being put together. And then later, my father actually told me, we were watching Mary Tyler Moore one night, and there was this laugh that was this classic, distinct laugh that you heard. It was like,
James L. Brooks.
James L. Brooks. My dad said, that's James L. Brooks. He's the you know, creator of the show. And being aware of that and listening to that laugh over the years on Mary Tyler Moore and on Rhoda and on Taxi, and hearing the not just the laugh, but the timing of the laugh. I mean, he would laugh in places that no one else was laughing. And it was a laugh about the process of putting it together. I mean, I was so acutely aware that I was thinking, why would he be laughing there? And I realized, wow, you know, when they were rehearsing it, the actor, they must have like been working on some piece, and it was the build up to what the audience laughed at, the joke. But he would laugh, and he was, you know, he was very unself-conscious with his laugh. So it would kind of come very loudly in places. And so growing up, I always felt like I was sort of, whenever I'd hear his laugh, I felt like I was sort of in on how he was putting it together, even though, you know, I might have been wrong. And years later, I got to know Jim Brooks, and I talked to him about this, and you know, he just smiled because I think, you know, he understood what I meant.
J.J. Abrams created the new series Lost. He spoke with Fresh Air TV critic David Bianculli. Lost airs Wednesday nights on ABC. The new season of Alias starts in January. J.J. Abrams has also been tapped to direct the next Mission Impossible film.